Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, here we go again. Temperatures today, as you've been hearing, expected to approach 100 degrees. And unless you flew in from Reykjavik this morning, you certainly felt yesterday's effects. A high of 103 degrees was recorded at 3:11 in the afternoon yesterday in New York City, just 3 degrees shy of the all-time record in New York City. Cooling centers open around the city again today. Most of New York's swimming pools at capacity again today. And while cooling centers and public pools are one option, the most common escape from the heat is air conditioning, both at businesses and at home. We are joined now by two guests who will help put all that air conditioning into perspective. Michael Clendenin is with Con Ed. He'll explain just what a heat wave like this does to our electrical grid and what they're asking you to do today. And then we'll hear from the author of a new book that explores the social as well as environmental impact of air conditioning. Turns out there's a connection between changing the climate in your living room and changing and climate change around the globe, but also in cultural change around the globe. For now, Michael Clendenin from Con Ed, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for coming on.
Brian, good morning, and thanks for having me on.
And we've been hearing a bit on the news about the strain put on the system by the heat wave, but give us some basic numbers. What did Con Ed experience so far today? What are you expecting?
Yesterday, as you mentioned, we came near our all-time peak. It was approaching 13,000 megawatts at 5 o'clock. Didn't quite reach it. Our all-time is 13,100 or so, set back in 2006. We could again, we will again reach that that stratosphere, if you will. We expect sometime today.
Are you at all surprised by this? Because some people had predicted that because of the recession, meaning business usage is down in general, that even with a very hot stretch like this, that Con Ed wouldn't approach the record peaks.
Well, a couple of factors go into that. There clearly is a reduction in the growth in demand, and has been for the past year or so. We were growing by, our demand was growing by, 1.8% or 2% only 4 or 5 years ago. It's now projected to grow at less than 0.5%. That's in terms of megawatts. That's about the difference of about 400 extra megawatts as compared to about 200 or so now. But we do expect to always grow just simply with the population growing. And don't forget, you've got people out of work, and now they're home, and the demands may shift to the residential areas compared to Manhattan. But you're always going to see some growth somewhere, especially with all the electronic gadgets and things we use nowadays.
Do you want to give us any update on the 65,000 people without service that was referred to in the newscast?
Yeah, 6,500. Metered customers. It's quite right. We've got about 3.2 million customers that we serve, or about 9 million people in New York City and Westchester. We've got scattered outages throughout this, and at the current moment, we've got about 6,500 or so. Since this whole thing started, really for us yesterday, with the increased demand, we've restored close to 20,000 customers who had lost power at some point during this heat wave.
Is that because very local transformers go out, or what? Why does that happen in such small pockets?
That's absolutely correct. You've got really what we see is scattered outages. You get transformers, or we call them feeder cables, electric distribution cables. They serve your home. They might serve your block. They might serve a major, a commercial strip or something. And if they go out, or we lose more than really two or three, you can see a power outage. With a lot of utilities, if you lose just one, you have a power outage, but not with us.
Another Con Ed official was quoted in the Times today saying that yesterday was simply round one of a prize fight. So that was a little scary. Is there a cumulative effect when the system takes on a heavy load like it is this week?
Absolutely. I mean, you think of it, when did this heat wave start, really? Sunday or late Saturday? Mm-hmm. And so we've got an underground system, 93 miles of cable that could circle the world, I think, 3.5 times or something. That stuff has been baking since then. Now on Tuesday, when people started coming back from vacations, and you know, that's when our load started to really start to grow. And so you've had the cumulative effect of the fact that the cables were hot anyway, and then with people coming back and using their air conditioners and they're back in town, it starts to really starts to push the capacity.
What strategies are you recommending that people employ? What are you asking people to do? I think we're all hearing the recommendation that we keep thermostats at 78.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Okay, yep, 78 is one recommendation. Also, that don't run the air conditioner if you're not home. Turn it off. Set it to a timer if you want your house cool when you get home, so that if you know what time you're coming home, have the timer set so it turns on 20 minutes before or so. Keep your blinds and your shades closed. You want to keep the sun out of your home or apartment as best you can, so don't let things inside heat up. So close those shades, the blinds. Any big appliances you have, washers, dryers, dishwashers, run them at night because they generate a lot of heat. And again, the idea is to kind of keep your home or apartment cool as best you can.
Michael Clendenin, a spokesman for Con Ed, still with us, and also joining us now, Stan Cox, author of Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World and Finding New Ways to Get Through the Summer. It's now out on from the New Press. Stan, welcome to WNYC.
Good to be with you, Brian.
So as you hear Michael from Con Ed rattle off those numbers, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking that I'm glad I don't have Michael's job and I don't have to worry about how to deal with this immediate situation. And I'm certainly not going to come on the radio in New York and say everybody ought to go cold turkey on air conditioning today and just tough it out, because air conditioning has been proven to save lives during intense heat waves. But the fact that it is a public health measure during situations like this doesn't justify its lavish use in all phases of our everyday life for months at a time. And so that's a lot of what the book's about. It's similar to the situation where maybe a heavily armored Humvee is a good vehicle to have if you're driving into a combat zone, but it's not the best choice for everyday transportation. So the peak demand problem that Michael has to deal with is one problem caused largely by air conditioning in the summer, but we also have the total consumption of electricity throughout the year, which is another problem that has to be dealt with, and it's something that air conditioning has added a lot to in recent years.
So, listeners, what's your air conditioning threshold? Does it have to be a day like we've had over the last few in order for you to turn on the AC, or when it gets to 75 or 80 degrees, do you start hitting the air conditioning just because it feels good? Do you think about the global climate as well as your home or apartment's climate when you hit the AC? What's your air conditioning threshold? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And just for comparison, you write in your book that the amount of energy that air conditioners use in America equals the same amount that the entire continent of Africa uses for all their electricity needs, and that air conditioning makes up almost 20% of total electricity consumption in U.S. homes. 20%, even though summer doesn't last all that long. Is that because there's so much air conditioning or because it's so energy inefficient?
Well, actually, since the early to mid-90s, the efficiency of home air conditioning equipment has increased by 28%, which is a pretty good achievement. Over that same time, though, the amount of electricity used to cool the average air-conditioned home has increased by 37%. So it's actually canceled out the efficiency gains plus a lot more. The main reasons have been that houses have become larger over time, up until the big bust anyway. We've had a lot more situations like you're going through now, and also a lot more people have switched from room to central air conditioning.
Where are you, by the way? You don't sound like you grew up in South Brooklyn.
No, I was born in near Atlanta, Georgia, but I live in Kansas now. I've lived in Kansas for a long time now, and 103 is a fairly routine summer temperature in Kansas, but we're not having, in the city Salina where I live, we are not dealing as much with the urban heat island effect that you have in New York, which really intensifies the temperatures.
Right. So, Michael from Con Ed, can you break down the share of energy use by commercial versus home units? Who's the bigger culprit, the person who leaves the AC on in their bedroom all day, you know, to keep their cats comfortable or whatever, or the midtown office building that blasts cold air to the point that there are people wearing sweaters at work when it's 103 degrees outside?
Let me see if I can describe it this way. Certainly the bigger overall loads in our system, but just because of, if you just look at New York City and Manhattan and the, you know, the outer boroughs, you know, the residential boroughs, the biggest loads are when we're in the workday week and Manhattan's in business, and all those commercial buildings are using a lot of energy, albeit in a lot of energy-efficient buildings, a lot of them with modern cooling systems, but they're using up a lot of the energy. So the overall load certainly drops off in the weekend and nighttime when people go home. But at nighttime and weekend is when you have the most of your load is then in the residential areas. The other way I can describe it is, you know, it, just as a matter of maybe as part of this conversation, the residential cooling that goes on during this time of year makes up 75% of the residential peak load. In other words, when we're sending out the most juice, 75% of that is due strictly to air conditioning.
Wow. A question for both of you. Does air conditioning improve air quality? If there's an air quality alert in effect, as there is right now, which means don't exercise outdoors, what if I go into my nice cold air-conditioned gym? Is it better, or is it just frozen pollution on ice?
Well, Michael, do you...
Well, you know, with anything electric, maybe you can handle this one better, but I can say with any electric device, you're using, you're increasing the carbon footprint, okay? You are, and there's any electric usage is making a power plant burn somewhere. It's making electric cables, work somewhere, and so you're increasing emissions, you're increasing the overall, you know, planet's exposure to these kinds of things. So,
but my question was a little different. Stan, maybe you know. does air conditioning in a home, or for that matter in a car, improve the quality of the air? Because it certainly feels like that to people. And I know that kids with asthma, for example, are sometimes taken into air conditioning for relief.
Right. So it does, because there's a filter, it air conditioning can take pollen and other allergens out of the air that's coming into a home. It can give you relief from the general air pollution as well by, if you chill the surrounding air, you don't sense the irritation from the pollution as much. It cools your mucous membranes and so forth. And so that's one way of sort of masking pollution. But all of that is accomplished at the cost of increasing the general outdoor air pollution. Mm-hmm. So it, in the end, it's going to make air conditioning possibly even more necessary in the future.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on that, but I agree with Stan. If you just go down a city street and feel those air conditioners blowing that hot air back onto the street, that's what you're getting.
And he's talking about carbon load for global warming. You're talking about pollution right outside, or at least heat right outside from all the air conditioning. So let's take a phone call. That was right, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. It's blowing it. Well, it's blowing out. Well, it's also blowing out the air that's already there. I'm kind of remembering when I grew up in Queens Village and we had the double window fan that my brother and I grew up with, and all it did was blow in the hot air from outside, but it felt better that you had something blowing. And then to clean up the air in our room, our mom would turn it around and pace it outside.
Michael Clendenin from Con Ed, Stan Cox, author of Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World, and Francis in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I live in Manhattan, and I walk around a lot. And I have been horrified to see these stores with their doors wide open, with air conditioning blasting in order, I guess, to attract customers. What can we do about that?
Does Con Ed, Michael, have a suggestion?
Well,
you don't make the law, but
I can imagine we supported. There was a law passed by the city council. I think it was a year or two ago that would go after store owners who did just that.
It's not legal for stores. I think they have to be chain stores or of a certain size, like 4,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a waste of energy. I mean, she's got a good point. And now I know there are some stores that have got various reasons of why they need to. There might be the outdoor bistro thing, kind of restaurants and stuff like that, who have got some other issues. But, these store owners who keep the doors wide open are wasting a lot of energy.
So, Stan, you said you're originally from Atlanta. So is Cindy at Ditmas Park. Hi, Cindy. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I grew up outside of Atlanta also, and I spent a lot of time in Columbus, Georgia, on my grandmother's front porch when I was a kid. And we hardly ever use air conditioning, although I have to say we're using it now. But we only have a few units, and we spend a lot of time on our front porch staying cool. And it's just a great place to live in the city because you have these wonderful front porches and a lot of shade, and it just reminds me of my youth in Georgia.
Cindy, thank you very much. And Stan, talking about Atlanta and places like that, while you do come down pretty hard in your book on our consumption practices, you do acknowledge that air conditioning has played a significant role in the economic development of the United States, and I guess that refers specifically to the South, right?
Right. Since 1960, 70% of economic growth has occurred in the Sun Belt, and that's largely due to the huge migration of people from north to south. Since 1950, the population of the Sun Belt has increased by 125% or so, whereas the Northeast has increased by about 25%.
One of the best parts of your book, I think, is about how air conditioning has, excuse the pun, conditioned us. In other words, our standards of hot and cold have actually changed. One of our producers is a big fan of Westerns, and we were talking today about how you really see people, rarely see people drenched in sweat in the old West. And maybe that's just a confection of Hollywood, but does that mean that people were simply more used to it 100 years ago?
Yes, in more recent years, science has shown that there is a process of adaptation that our bodies go through when we're exposed, especially when we're active in hot weather. And it doesn't happen if you're living in an air-conditioned bubble from home and in the car to work and back. And it's a process that involves molecular means in the body, and your body actually has what they call molecular memory, so that if you have built up your heat tolerance in June, say, and then you go off to Alaska for a couple of weeks on vacation and come back, you'll be a little less tolerant, but you recover that tolerance much more quickly.
The calls that we're getting and comments on our page from listeners, tyranny of AC, says Becky in Manhattan. Sick of being cold all the time. Doesn't turn on AC until it's over 99 degrees. Sean in Whitestone, he likes 78 as a standard, says he wants dry air rather than lower temperature. Air conditioning does that too on a humid day. That's one of the probably one of the most comforting things about it. And Rebecca in Manhattan has one last question for Michael Clendenin from Con Ed. Hi, Rebecca.
Oh, hi. Hi. Yeah, I was just saying that even though I hate air conditioning and all the preset is usually freezing, the problem is most of the buildings in Manhattan are not designed for any outdoor air. So it's pretty important to have some sort of air conditioning because in May my office doesn't turn on the AC, and it's kind of hard to work until they turn it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michael, does Con Ed have a position on that, the fact that buildings are designed, office buildings really, without windows anymore, windows that you can open?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's, it's obviously it's essential that people be comfortable where they work and that there be some kind of system, central air, cooling, heating system that keeps it at a moderate temperature that people can work safely and healthy. She's right. It's a fact that when you're in an office building, unless you have some kind of efficient, well-run cooling or heating system, it's going to bake or it's going to freeze or, depending on the time of year, you've got to have some system in place to handle that. You can't just open windows.
All right. Michael Clendenin, spokesman for Con Ed, Stan Cox, author of Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World, out now from the New Press. Thank you both very much for coming on with us today. Good luck keeping things running, Michael.
Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate your help.
And listeners, we want you to get in on a little summertime fun. Brian Lehrshow is compiling a summer music mixtape, a playlist of the best hot weather songs. You can listen to the mix at our website and even submit your own track. We'll be updating the mixtape with your selections throughout the day.
The bees are humming. The summers are coming. It's hot.
It's hot from Gene and Billy, selected by WNYC's very own Rex Stone, who moonlights as host of Fool's Paradise on WFMU and plays stuff like that all the time. Hear this track and all the other mixtape selections and add your own, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrshow.
He's a bread as big as me. He was working so hard, I started sweating, so I just put him out of his misery. Cause baby, it's hot. Don't you know I'm burning up? The neighbors are fighting. The mosquitoes are biting.